Let's go now, though, to the fallout from the Stern Hu verdict. The former Rio executive and three other employees of Rio Tinto were sentenced to between 7 and 14 years jail yesterday for accepting bribes and stealing trade secrets. Rio Tinto has now sacked the four men. But Foreign Minister Stephen Smith still has, quote, serious unanswered questions about the most controversial part of the trial, which covered the stealing of commercial secrets. That part of the trial was held behind closed doors. Jerome Cohen is Professor of Chinese Law at New York University and a Senior Fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations, and I spoke with him a short time ago from New York.
Thank you, Fran.
Jerome Cohen, did Stern Hu and his colleagues, in your view, receive a fair trial?
Well, certainly it wasn't fair by international standards. For a guilty plea on the first count, it would be all right because we don't try guilty pleas by and large. But the second count, the commercial secrets acquisition that was declared secret, is very troublesome. There are wheels within wheels, people say, that Hong Kong companies have been involved, that perhaps political leaders have been involved. You know, if one only knew the whole story, it would be a great, great thing. But we may never know the whole story, but we'll surely know more than we know now.
And it seems to be based, according to the judge anyway, what's filtered out, that China claims its steel sector paid 1 billion yuan, too much for iron ore last year because of the bribery and industrial espionage by the Rio Tinto Four. That's the charge. Our Foreign Minister Stephen Smith said last night that he is, quote, advertising the fact that he doesn't think it was in China's interest not to have this part of the trial transparent. Do you think this is against China's interests, business interests?
Well, certainly from the broader point of view, in most cases that I have been advisor in China, the Chinese government loses by secrecy. People don't credit the Chinese government claims that certain people have committed espionage or stolen commercial secrets because the procedures are so non-transparent. So China hurts itself by not opening many of these so-called secret trials. And I think in this case, too, it leaves so many suspicions. It gives such a bad reputation to Chinese justice that I think China's soft power suffers by this kind of thing.
And in terms of soft power, Australia and China do have a consular agreement which would, or should have, you would have thought, allowed Australian consular officials to observe the full trial, both parts of the trial. That was denied, and you've been critical of the Australian government for not doing more to get access to the court.
Well, at least the Australian government did a little bit more than the US government did when confronted by a similar problem last summer, even though its consular convention and the Australian one with China are virtually identical. And the conventions are clear. And Chinese practice used to recognize the right of foreign consuls to attend even secret trial sessions. And now we found a 1995 Chinese instruction endorsed by all the major judicial ministries, including the secret police, as well as the court and prosecutor, that says international obligations, including the right of foreign consuls to attend secret trials, have to be honored and come before domestic law. And yet the Chinese government, trying to fend off your foreign minister's allegations and questions, said Chinese law must come before international obligations. Well, that's a very dangerous comment for China to make. So I think China looks bad on this. There is a revival of their former very hostile, defensive attitude to the world community. So there's a more nationalistic tone, a revival of the old sort of anti-international spirit that may be a reflection of China's rising power, may be a reflection of the new nationalism that's sweeping certainly the younger generation in China. We don't know, but I think it's important to point out this is a dangerous anti-world community posture, and again, it hurts China's position.
And meanwhile, there's four men now with facing jail terms. Do you agree with Australia's foreign minister that these sentences imposed on Stern Hu and the other three Rio executives are harsh?
Well, you know, it depends on the legal system, but China has a right to defend itself against corruption. commercial bribery, especially in important negotiations, is an important thing. So China has a right to condemn these people. I don't think the sentences are unduly harsh given China's normal sentencing policy. But the fact is, why did they pick these defendants? China and the steel industry included is awash with corruption. So why were these people picked out and not others? Did it have something to do with the ore negotiation pricing? I think it did. But what about all the others who aren't being pursued or are being pursued in totally non-transparent proceedings? I think if you're after corruption, you have to take an even-handed and vigorous policy toward it.
And can I ask you just finally, what do you think the way forward is in terms of appeal? At least one of the men convicted, Wang Yong, will appeal. The other three are still deciding. In your view, is that a real avenue of appeal?
Well, there's an avenue, but appeals usually don't go anywhere, in part because the trial court often secretly checks with the appellate court before it even hands down its trial judgment. And, of course, an appeal in Chinese eyes traditionally is a refusal to admit guilt. It's a challenge to the state. It shows you're not really repentant, and sometimes you could regret it. I don't know what deal Stern Hu and his lawyers may have made with the government, but they may think it's wiser not to appeal, certainly on the receipt of bribes. If he resisted, as he apparently did, the charge of stealing commercial secrets, they may want to appeal that, and that's worth 5 years. I thought maybe China would make a show of due process by acquitting some of the defendants on one charge and convicting them on the other. Occasionally they have done that in order to make a good impression.
Professor Cohen, you mentioned the fact that bribery within the iron ore sector is not unknown. What about bribery in the Chinese judicial system and the use of bribes to help get convicted prisoners out of jail?
Well, you know, it's a very serious problem. One of the vice presidents of the National Supreme Court of China has been sentenced to life for corruption. And many judges are involved in corruption. They're paid so little, they often feel the need to take money on the side. It's a very sad thing. Efforts are being made to stamp it out, but until the judges are treated like autonomous people who should be independent and should be paid well, as they are in many other countries, and you have to start by insulating the courts from local pressures, Communist Party pressures, or many distorting influences. Being a Chinese judge is difficult because you're under a lot of pressure in cases that have any sensitivity. And by the way, this case is not over, even if there's no appeal. Because in many cases like this, even with 10-year sentences, the defendant gets out quicker. Of course, legally, after serving half the sentence, the defendant is eligible to apply for parole. But often, medical excuses are found. There was even one case involving a Chinese national resident in America, Ms. Gao Jian, around 2000. She was sentenced to 10 years for espionage on behalf of Taiwan. 48 hours later, she was on her way to Washington, where she lived. A deal had been made in advance to first punish her formally by vindicating the Chinese judicial process and then let her go on medical grounds. So we don't know whether Stern Hu can be home in a year or in 5 years. It's just not clear.
That's Jerome Cohen, Professor of Chinese Law at New York University and Senior Fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations. I spoke with him earlier from New York. It's 6:45 on RN Breakfast.